Why, hello and welcome. Welcome to the Peer Pressure Podcast. I am Diane, sometimes known as Diane Kamikaze, and I am your host. The reason why I do this podcast is because I am a champion of heavy music. I've always found my favorite songs since I was a young kid had riffs, hooks, were either metal, hardcore, hard rock, or punk, or something fairly aggressive in attitude and sound. And I am all about appreciating the people that keep that world going, whether they're musicians, webmasters, other podcasters, record label and festival owners. It's important to me to recognize what these people do in that realm of music. So, I am here to bring them to you in a different context, more than a Wikipedia entry or a press release, a little more personal and a lot more fun. I'm a rocker for life, and I hope these episodes do make a difference. Send me feedback at diane@wfmu.org, and my Facebook page is Diane Kamikaze Farris, Rocker for Life. Like my page there, and I will keep everybody updated on podcast episodes in that space. Thanks so much for listening, and stay tuned. It's time for another throwback episode. This is from 2008. I interviewed Vorf, the vocalist and guitarist of Samael, who are from Switzerland. This aired originally October 16th, 2008. It was a full three-hour special. I'm breaking up the interview part into two podcast episodes. Stay tuned! My guest today is Vorf from Samael. He's a vocalist and guitar player.
Yeah.
And we are talking in Poughkeepsie, New York, right after their show with Amorphis. You've been on the road for
A few days.
A few days.
Yeah, a few days.
And how do you like touring?
I love it. And basically, we love being in America. And that's a long time we didn't come here. So it's kind of fresh for us to be back and, you know, to have the chance to present basically two of our albums. Because as we didn't come from for Rain of Light, it's a way to promote both albums at one point.
Right.
So, you know, and I'm kind of glad to see that people really enjoy it and I don't really feel like there is people from the past and people from now, you know, because we had difference in our music.
Absolutely.
And sometimes you feel there is people who get stuck somewhere and they're just like, this album or those two and not the rest. But here it's kind of, they're more open to it. And it's wider, they can enjoy the first one till the last one. We signed a couple of people, you know, they had everything we ever released, and you feel a little bit like, wow, you know, you have to be open mind if you have all that we got.
Oh yeah.
You know, it goes from here to there, and it's not really like a one single path.
No, so I wouldn't say that wide. All of your releases are the same at all.
Thank you. I think this is a compliment, totally.
Well, yeah. How old were you when your first record came out?
I was almost 20.
Yeah. So I can tell from the lyrics that your view of life has changed.
Yeah, but I'm not the same person.
Obviously.
Hopefully. I mean, you know, if you think the same way when you're 18 than when you're 30-something, there's nothing wrong with it, but maybe you miss something.
Or you're not looking.
Yeah, maybe you're not looking. that's a good way to put it. Yeah, totally.
Are you renting much gear for this tour?
No, actually, no. Everything we took is from our own gear, except from the drum part, which is using for the percussion. And Mass buys some light for the tour, because, you know, he's handling light show for many bands.
Yeah, I saw him. He was doing lights for Carcass.
Totally,
I saw him like three weeks ago.
He must have done like hundreds of bands, you know, 10 years now. And he's taking care of this for us too. I mean, he's not doing the like obviously because he's playing bass, but yeah, he's looking for the design and what we might have to use to look cool on stage, whatever.
You don't have to use that much to look cool.
Something. I kind of agree with you that, you know, simple, once the music is good, it's good, it doesn't need much. But, you know, if you can add something, It's only like cherry on the cake.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, tonight show, you did have a banner up and you did have the use of lights, and I saw you at BB King's two nights ago, and that was not the case. I don't think you had a
banner.
Well,
it wasn't wide enough. Yeah. It wasn't high enough to have a backdrop or something.
But yeah, so I was actually glad to get to see two shows.
Cool.
You know.
No.
Well, the first time I saw you was at Dynamo, 97.
Right, I remember that one. Yeah. I mean, you remember the first time we played Dynamo. You remember the first time we played Wacken the way it is. It's not the same, but, you know, it's kind of a festival who got not only big names, so wide and so kind of, they're picky about the band. They're booking their stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's pretty open and they really have different genres.
Totally,
you know.
Yeah.
Can you talk about your label, how Galactical came about?
Totally, yeah. As we finish our deal with Intermedia, we decide, well, maybe we won't give everything to a label anymore. We might, you know, have a little bit more control on what we're doing. So we try to do our own label and just license it to, I mean, for Reign of Light was Regain in Europe, Nuclear Blast in America, and for Solar Soul is Nuclear Blast worldwide. Mm-hmm. Except Switzerland, that we have a different deal there, but you know, basically that's how we work. So we own the masters, and that's something important for us, you know, to not give everything to someone else. So
was your deal with Century Media, was it a year deal or a number of products deal?
That was a very bad deal.
Okay.
You know, well, nothing against the label themselves. Yeah. You know, we had bad blood between each other at a certain point, of course. But yeah, we signed a very bad deal, and you know, we were young, inexperienced, and we really wanted to do something, so we were ready for anything, more or less. And so that was a mistake, you know, we learned from it, and we've tried to not commit the same one once again, so.
But then it got you motivated to do your own label and to look at things differently.
Yeah, totally.
And will you keep the Galactical imprint for the future?
I think so, I think so, yeah. Yeah, because we don't want to give, you know, the masters to anyone anymore.
Yeah.
So that's mean, you know, the label we're signed with, they can exploit the music for a certain time, and once this time is over, we can do whatever we want with it. And they cannot decide that they want to do a compilation or a best of or whatever once we are not agreed to this. Which wasn't the case for Century Media. They can do whatever they want with everything we did from the first album till Eternal.
Were any of the releases not what you wanted to have come out?
Okay, I wasn't crazy about the idea of the DVD.
Really?
They released. I had to admit, after it went out, that it was a missing link. You know, we should have done something before.
People
were asking for it. So that was probably our mistakes, but we're a little bit maybe too picky about what we want to expose.
Well, you're your own worst judge,
and you think, well, that's not good enough. So we thought we had nothing, and they decide, well, that's good enough for DVD, so they just put it out. Best of thing, which is Aeonix, which is more or less a collection of everything we did from day one to Eternal, that even include things from Era One project.
Okay.
Because it was released under the summer banner, but to me it was a real different project, and I didn't want it to mix both things, you know, much. But hey, that was their choice, the same contract. They can do whatever they want with it. So
could they just pull songs and do greatest hits forever with everything that had been released?
Yes, they can do that if they want. But you know, they've been nice enough to ask us what we thought about it. Not that we could say we don't want to have this out, but we had the choice. Either we have an input or not. And I thought, well, Azu is gonna be out anyway, so we better look, you know, to be sure that it's as good as possible. Finally, you know, it wasn't that bad. I mean, I would never have done something like this. Mm. Not at this point, and not the way they did it. But yeah, we had the chance to have a word. And
so you're getting a little quality control.
Yeah, we had that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they don't have to ask us, but they do it because they know, you know, we're gonna try to make it as good as possible. I think it's all good, no way.
Well, I mean, if you have stuff out there, I mean, you never know who's gonna find that record, and it's the only thing, you know, that's
exactly.
Can you talk about the instrumentation of the band? Because when you started, it was just you and your brother.
Yeah. Actually, we thought we could go forever like this. I didn't know many bands who did it. I know Hellhammer, when I started up, there were only two people. Yeah. It's a little bit like, yeah, if they can't do it like this, we might do it like this too, but we will keep on doing it like this forever. And it's probably when I saw for the first time Alastair's live, they were a band from the area we were coming from too. And Mass was so full of energy, and you know, he didn't have much to say in the band, but it was really like the leading thing, you know, you will just see him, and I thought, you know, somebody like this will probably add a lot to the band. And we asked him, they knew each other very well with C, they even thought at some point to have a band together. So, you know, it was like a good combination.
No, so it was logical.
It clicks immediately. And from then on, we had a keyboard player for one album and a mini album, Rodolphe, which was just somebody that could play the thing that Xi composed. And we were not exactly thinking the same way. We were not coming from the same background, and we didn't have the same view on a lot of things. So, well, you know, he went his own way. It was not such a big deal, but we had to find a solution to either replace him or to have somebody playing drum while Xi will move to the keyboard. And it took us some time to decide, like, well, you know, we might use a drum machine, program the drum, and he could play, and that would be it, you know. Record company was not really up for that. A lot of people say, well, you know, you're just gonna kill yourself on this one, because you know, that's not gonna fly. You can do this in studio. A lot of the other band do
but
it.
Because of the live situation.
But live, you know, people want to see a drummer. And we're like, well, whatever, you know. It's going to be different, and fair enough. And I was very surprised by the reaction, because since before the album went out, actually, we played festival in Europe. And it was such a step from, you know, ceremony to passage. They went totally into it, and they were just not... Well, okay, maybe a couple of people complain about it, but like a couple, over thousands that up front you. So that was not such a big deal, really. And we thought, well, nowadays, you know, people still ask us sometimes, maybe you never thought about having a real drummer or Xi moving back to the drum. And I don't think so, because this is something that makes Samuel different from any other bands. I mean, we probably have other things that, you know, set us apart from the rest, but this is kind of a big thing, I'll say, especially in rock music, because it's kind of, it makes us a crossover between metal, industrial, electronic, and whatever, and which is kind of a weird combination, but it makes sense in my mind, it makes sense, you know, in our minds, so, you know, that's good.
Oh, and it works on stage completely. I mean, as an audience member, he drums where the accents need to be, where the heavy stuff is.
Yeah, well,
is,
you know, he's a drummer in the first place, so he likes to hit things.
Yeah.
That's what drummer like to do. So, yeah, you know,
are you saying that as a brother? Do you like to hit you? Is that like a...
We never did that, no. Okay. We never really fight. Okay. It wasn't like this. You know.
Who's older?
I'm older.
Okay.
No. It's funny you ask.
I don't know. I don't know.
I'm older.
Yeah.
And, so since, you know, we did Passage and Eternal with, actually we had a second guitar player at that time, Chaos from France. And that was good to have somebody, because then I could concentrate more on the vocal, and the guitar could have harmonies and, you know, things that you cannot do when you're a single guitar player. And it went on for a few years. And I think it was in 2001. That, you know, we had like not many shows, and he had other projects, because we didn't live in the same area. We were like, I don't know, almost 1,000 kilometers from each other.
So. Wow, really?
Yeah, well, you know, he was living in the south of France, and we were up in Switzerland. And so he just called us and said, well, you know, got all the thing in my mind, you know, things are not moving at the moment, so I just move on to other project. And we thought, well, you know, maybe it was written somewhere that it has to happen this way, but that's where we decide to focus on a different project, Era One, which was like totally electronic, and we didn't have an opponent to play, we didn't know with who, and that was just when Macro joined the band, 2002, that it was like, not a rebirth, but really a new start, a real new start, and strange thing, really, because Eternal went out in 99, Macro joined in 2001, and we actually did a world tour in 2003 for this album out in 99,
right.
Which is, you know, no band do that. Tell me, which one? Some hardcore band maybe, Rollins can do that. But besides, really, you know.
You can do it too.
We did it.
Yeah,
we did it. Yeah, but you know, you probably know how it works in the business. I mean, there is always people telling you, this is not the way you should do it.
Right.
Never, you know, and it works fine, totally fine. I mean, we went, Europe was fantastic. America was like,
that,
you know,
was the Strapping Young Lad Cathedral.
And Cathedral.
Yeah.
And in Europe, we were just with Cathedral. And that was fantastic to be with Lee, because we were riding with each other for very long time.
Yeah.
Before we had an album out, you know.
Oh, cool.
We just had a couple of songs on compilation, and we had a 7-inch EP out, and that's it. And
oh,
we
right,
were just trading stuff. And so I know him forever, and he's a fantastic guy. So yeah, that was a good thing. Totally good things. Unfortunately, we didn't come for end of flight in America, which is
right.
A bad thing.
Right.
But hey.
No, it's not bad, it's just what happened. It's
yeah,
not,
but we were frustrated. We were frustrated because,
right,
you know,
yeah,
it's
so.
when you got a new album, with you think, well, like, for example, you know, sure, we promote both albums on this tour, but actually from Rain of Flight, we play what? Rain of Flight, that's it. Tonight, you know, that's it, one song. If we will have tour for this album, we'll have at least 5 songs of that one, which is what we did in Europe. Even more, at a certain point, we had 6. Maybe it's too much because people want to hear the old stuff, but you know, you kind of mix the new thing, the old stuff, we try to find a way. So there is a lot of songs we never play here from the album. Maybe, you know, in the future, we'll find a way to add this and change this. We'll see. But it's always a little bit frustrating when you kind of do that.
Well, you have plenty of stuff to choose from in terms of needing to support the latest release.
Yeah, you know, this is the thing I mean, if you do a new album, you usually think this is the best ever you could do. Yeah, in general.
Do you have like...
So you want to play it and propose it to people and see how they react to it, you know, if it works or not.
Right, because you don't know. Like,
you
made this record, you're in the studio, you put it out, you're like, does this suck? I don't even know. Like, you wouldn't... I mean, you know what
that
means.
That's a big
to
thing.
You.
That's always a big thing when you play songs, new songs for the first time.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Yeah.
How does that feel? Like, just sort of waiting or,
it's,
you know...
exciting, but it's kind of when you play your first show. Not that much of a stress thing, but you just wonder. You just don't know. There is, like, the normal set, and then you hit that new song. And this is, like, a question mark, you know. But it gives you a kick, which is cool.
Oh, yeah, no, that is cool. You're just like, okay, it went over all right, like...
Yeah, and when it works, that's a good kick.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Valdemar's been working with you since Blood Ritual.
Exactly, yeah. That's actually one of the things I'm happy when we were with Century Media, because this is thanks to Century Media that we had the connection with him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because, you know, he was good friend with Robert, the owner of the label. And they proposed him to produce the album, and we didn't know what the producer was all about. You know, we didn't have this before, and we're like, well, I don't know, you know, somebody would just come and what? Say that this is not good enough, we don't care. And he was really, you know, the perfect guy for us. He was totally humble.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't try to push us in one direction or another. He was just taking our stuff and goes like, yeah, that's good enough. And what's about just this? You know, maybe, yeah, okay, maybe it did this. You know, it was kind of, not a fight, never a fight, but we were very protective of our music. So it was kind of difficult on the first album. We didn't trust him too much. There were a couple of things that he would say, well, and maybe this can, you know, make a big difference too. But, well, no, this is too much. This is too different from, you know, the original idea, so we won't go there. And then you listen to your own song and think, hey, what's about that? Sure, he said in the studio we should have done it. And then, you know, the second time you work with him, you're more confident because you know that, you know, thing he said actually came back to you in a good way. They were meaningful. And I think for ceremony, we knew better what we wanted to achieve, and we knew better how to interact with each other. And nowadays, it's like totally easy. It's like we are playing forever together. You know, just the two last album, actually, what we did, we finished the whole songs the way we thought they should be on the album. Mm-hmm. And then we asked him to check it out. And it just come like the magical touch. You know, like, well, okay, just move this there. Eventually it's better. And you don't have to say it twice. You heard it once and goes, of course it is better. Right. I don't even know what I didn't thought this before. It's like, you may be too much into it, you don't see it anymore. Right. And then, of course, if it will not be there. Mm-hmm. I suppose a year from the recording, you will look at it and goes like, ah, you know, we should have not done this that way, blah, blah, whatever.
Well, you're attached to a way that it is or a way that you've rehearsed it.
Totally, totally. Yeah. It's very difficult to have a...
perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah, have a little bit of distance.
So he gave us that and we trust him. So I don't know, but probably for the next one, we're still going to work with it.
So did he really mix the last two or was he more just
No, it was just for the production.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, interfere on the construction of the songs. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes, you know, take one part out, add this, or just move this there. It's very silly. Sometimes
like
it's not much, but it makes so much a big difference. So, you know, it's worth it, totally. Yeah. Now, we mixed the two last album, we mixed it, them in Sweden. With Stefan Blomman. He did Clawfinger, Rammstein. I mean, he's been famous for Rammstein, but he did a lot of things before, like Peace, Love and Pitbull, maybe you didn't know them. That we totally freaked out when we first heard it. It was so powerful, so over the top great. But we didn't know how, you know, to get in touch with him. And actually, when we had this contact, you know, we were trying. He was totally cool about it. So we did Rain of Light and Solarson with it. I don't know about the next one, we'll see, because we want to have something more guitar-oriented. And he's mixing a very clinical way, because everything, you know, which is on the recording, you make sure you can hear it.
Right.
And maybe sometimes you have to sacrifice something, you know, to have more power.
Right.
And he never did that. He just told us, you know, you had to do the sacrifice before. Like, you know, you just erase this. You just come with less channel, and so I try to make it more powerful, but this is very hard for Xi because it just add up and add up and add up and you cannot stop.
Do you have any aspirations of doing producing like other bands or anything?
Never thought about it. I don't know, it would feel weird a little bit to Xi did it.
Yeah,
he did it for Rotten Christ
records,
he did it for My Insanity, which is a German that he actually signed and released on his own label back in the days. Yeah. I don't know for myself, because, you know, I'm not as musical as he is, but I usually have a outside vision of the thing. It's more conceptual than very musical.
Right.
And I'm not sure I could be a producer, actually.
Really?
I could maybe just, you know, give an overview of the thing.
Be an executive producer.
Yeah, something like this, you know. Rick Rubin just coming and was like, yeah, change this and that. And
right, and put my name on it.
I'll be back, you know. When it's done, I'll be back.
Go get me some coffee.
Yeah.
Hey, so I see that you have a lot of merchandise for sale. You've got a lot of interesting, different merchandise. I bought a Swiss Army knife.
Oh, did you?
Oh, yeah.
I think it's a great thing.
Yeah,
you know, we didn't dare to write knife because I think it's not... cool in the club.
Tool.
That's what we did.
Right,
yeah, totally. I mean, it is written inside, so we go, wow, tool
is
enough.
That's the greatest thing.
That Swiss Army knife.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, well, this is something we did lately, and I love that item.
Yeah,
totally.
That's awesome. So what's the coolest piece of merchandise you've ever offered?
I think this is this one.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, I mean, if you ask me, this is the thing I own and I use.
Yeah,
you know, to open bottles, to do things. Yeah, it's worth it.
It would be great if it had, like, a little section with a guitar pick that came out or something that was, like, oriented to the band somehow.
Well, you know, it's still possible to do.
Oh, but there's a toothpick in it, though, isn't there? Or is it tweezers? The white part. I'll have to look. It's the toothpick.
Yeah.
That's good though.
Yeah,
the toothpick is good. That's very metal.
Yeah, okay, if you say so. I follow you on this.
Having a toothpick.
And that concludes another podcast episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. More on the way. I am Diane Kamikaze. Check my Instagram handle is one word, Diane Kamikaze. Kamikaze ends with an E. On Facebook, you can find me as Diane Kamikaze Farris, Rocker for Life and Making a Difference. The full link to my index of shows and podcasts can be found on wfmu.org/playlists/DK. That's a capital D and a capital K. I'm working on encore presentations, and I've got years of interviews and podcasts. So if there's something that you'd like to see reposted that you missed, please get in touch. Send me email, diane@wfmu.org. And be sure to subscribe to the show. And if you like it, please rate it and review it. Wow. Thank you. See you next time.